This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
Let's continue then with the Nefesh HaChaim, and once again I just want to thank Bradley and Sean. This is the third successive week, is that right? We've been in their home, invaded their home every Sunday night. Thank you so much. Thanks a lot. Hi. Amazing. And I guess that even if there isn't a shiur, I'm sure that they would be happy to have you every Sunday night for supper. And this is the menu. Right. So last week we talked about how a person's actions impact up and above and throughout the universe as a result of that. And we talked last week about the fact that the human being is made up. The human soul has three parts to it: the nefesh, the ruach, and the neshama. The nefesh is the physical life force. So the energy, the human energy on the physical sense is what the nefesh is. The soul is energy, that we've already established. The physical energy with which we live, the energy that we walk around with and that we move with and that we bear ourselves with and that we make gestures with, that's all the nefesh. And then there is ruach, which is a little bit further than that. And ruach governs our intellect, our mind, but more so with respect to the power of speech. And the third one is neshama, which is seated in our intellects primarily, and our deeper feelings and deeper emotions are the area of neshama. So the area we impact the world with our energy. We have three dimensions of energy. Last week we spoke about the energy of the nefesh, the energy that results from human action. But every human action sets in motion a chain of energy, which goes all the way up to the source of our soul, and our souls are sourced at different levels. So some of our energy goes very high, and some of it doesn't go as high. Depends on who we are and where we're at, and it impacts in God's world, and then impacts in all the universes. There's no part of the universe that isn't impacted by an action of ours. And we learned a little bit of how that operates. So in chapter 13, we're going into the second dimension of the soul, which is the area of dibur, that which relates to ruach, and how does our speech impact? And speech is something that we take very for granted, and we often don't give a lot of thought to. We give thought to speech if we're making a presentation, if we're giving a lecture, if we're going into a negotiation or something where we know a lot depends on it. We go into speech and we prepare quite carefully, but in our day-to-day speech we don't. We assume that it's like there's no record of it. It's just you say something and then it's gone, so you don't really worry about it so much. Whereas an action leaves an impression, and that's so lacking in understanding and in feeling of what the power of speech is. Because even before we get onto the Kabbalistic stuff, just in terms of our own lives, our ability to impact people and to be impacted through the power of speech. How many times has something you've heard changed your life? How many times has something you've heard motivated you, uplifted you, angered you? Our ability to be to impact one another, our ability to affect one another in a very, very deep way, is by means of voice, perhaps more than speech than action. We do quite a lot of work in the United States with the Department of Justice around the management of racially and religiously motivated crimes, and particularly after 9/11. We were doing quite a lot before 9/11 as well. And it's quite an interesting environment because of the American Constitution, which allows total freedom of speech. And that's very, very entrenched. The freedom of speech is for two reasons that it's so entrenched. The one is because that's what has created what they call their free market of ideas. If you start limiting and controlling what people communicate, there isn't an opportunity to really debate and have conversations properly. So they regard a lot of the energy of the American economy and society is rooted in the fact that you're free to say whatever you want. And you can be the most challenging, outrageous thing, and that's fine. And there is some greatness in that. And the other reason that they do it is because they don't want, or they live in paranoia of any form of government control over thinking and speech. And that's coming, as they did, from the background, from the British, and certainly the various things that have happened in the world since that time. But it's one country where the level of freedom of speech is so absolute that it's almost disturbing. Not almost, it is disturbing. Because freedom of speech really only works when it's accompanied by a sense of responsibility. When people understand the power of speech, they should be free to speak. But when people don't understand the power of speech, it's sometimes a little disturbing. And one of the things that I often tell them, and it's had a big impact, and in some states they've changed the law. I said, well, here's an example of power of speech. I told them something, they got it. Communication actually changes in the law. In the state of New York, the law was changed as a result of this. When I'm sure you've heard the little rhyme, nursery rhyme, as I did as a child. Remember, sticks and stones can break my bones, and words cannot harm me. And they all nod their heads. And I say, that's responsible for enormous destruction in the world. Because what I was taught as a child is sticks and stones can only break my bones, but words can destroy me. It's not true that words can't harm me. Words are incredibly damaging. And how much work would therapists have if children weren't damaged by words? Most of the parental damage that we do to our children is a word, a phrase, that we don't even think of. We don't imagine the impact of that. And it sits somewhere in the subconscious. And because it comes from a parent, it comes from a high authority figure. And because it comes from a high authority figure, it sinks very, very deep into the subconscious. And it just sits there and stays there. Something that a parent might have said when the child was very small. Teachers can do that. Rabbis can do that. Anybody who's any kind of position of authority just says something and it sticks in people's minds. And they could have moved off it. They don't even remember it anymore. And meanwhile, the recipient sits with it in their mind. So a physical action can only have a physical reaction. And yes, we learned last time how it goes into the spiritual worlds and it has some kind of spiritual reaction as well. But not as much as a verbal action, because a verbal action hits at the soul. So a verbal action is much more powerful. You can motivate people to do things much more by word than by physical force. You can beat people and you can do... You can't get the same level of human energy out of using physical force as you can out of using oral motivation. If one knows how to motivate people and how to access people. So we need to understand that even before we get into Kabbalistic things, the potential of the word to uplift or to depress, the potential of the word to give people a sense of self and value, or to devalue themselves, to abuse people with words, or to praise people and honor people with words. Real honor, we can honor people. The problem with words is they're cheap. The problem is with words is it's easy to say them, so they have lost their meaning. But when one is able to utter words that the other person senses come from deep within you, and that's the big challenge when it comes to words, that most of our words don't come from deep within us. Most of our words are calculated. What should I say to get the desired effect? And we don't realize that the moment you go through that process, you get no desired effect, because the other human being perceives intuitively that the words are not authentic. So in order for words to be powerful, words need to, they don't have to be polished. They don't have to be perfect. For words to be powerful, they need to have energy and they need to come from deep within inside us. And if we can access deep places inside us before we speak, the power of those words are immense. It's unbelievable what change you can bring about in an instant in another human being by using words that come from a deep place. If you're in a bit of trouble and you need somebody to help you out, simple little things like that, as well as motivating an army to invade a continent, all with the power of words, just with the power of words. And it can't be done on email, by the way. And why can't it be done on email? Because? But what is impersonal about it? Why is that impersonal? There's no tone and no ability to judge authenticity. You don't know how long the guy sat at the other end working out what to say to make it all sound. So it's meaningless. Doesn't mean a thing. Unless one does it very spontaneously and you can really sense this is the person talking from their heart. But that's not usually the way we do emails. But it's when we are talking from our hearts, when we put the energy of emotion and authentic feeling into a word, and we project that word out, the capability of that word to strike a tone in another person and change them permanently, is enormous. Sorry?
Passion.
There has to be passion. I see the feeling and the passion that there is. But if we understand that words are energy, then something else starts developing. So what happens to energy eventually? Well, does it? Yeah, and then eventually? Well, what did Einstein say? Well, you can't destroy it. It's always there, in one form or another. So now all of a sudden, if we accept that words have energy, then words don't ever get destroyed. They hang around. They're there. And that's why in Kabbalah we often talk about the fact that you'll find sometimes that two people innovated something within weeks of each other. It happened with Einstein himself. And it happens often. It happens in Torah, that there's a major chiddush and you find that somebody else in another part of the world came out with the same discovery where nobody did for hundreds of years or thousands of years. All of a sudden two people come out with the same within 2 weeks of each other. Now, ideas, once it's been articulated, it's in the world. To create an idea that has never been there before, that's tough, that's hard. But once you've articulated, the energy is in the world. Now other people just have to access energy which already exists in the world. So when one has articulated something, you start a wave. One single individual who articulates a new idea, if it's a positive idea, if it's an idea that can change life, if it's an idea that can be meaningful, that creates a wave effect that others start picking up on. And that's how you get trends. And that's how you get all over the world. It's not just through a deliberate advertising campaign. Sometimes you get trends happening among people who've never had any communication with one another at all, because an idea has been articulated, it's the right time for the idea, the concept is in the world, the energy is there, people start picking up, and all of a sudden you start finding books being written all over the place, different angles, same idea, and it's new, it hasn't been done before. Why? The energy is in the world. So when we realize that a word therefore is energy and energy is not destroyed, now we realize that not only do our words have impact at the time they're uttered, but our words have impact eternally. They never stop having impact. The impact gets a little weaker as the sound kind of goes further and further into the ether, but the energy of an articulated thought remains permanent. It's always there. And it can always be accessed. If it's a negative thought, it emits negative energy permanently. It's a positive thought, it emits positive energy all the time. That's what words do. That's the power of Dibur. And the third thing that we've got to realize is what responsibility that is. Because both ways, our good words build worlds, just as we learned 2 weeks ago, that our deeds build universes and build worlds, and in fact the Olam Haba is that. That's what the Olam Haba is. It's the world that we have built through our actions and through our speech. We build spiritual forces which become accessible to us later on, and they can be positive and they can be negative. And that's part of what we have to account to when the Gemara says that when we come upstairs after 120 years, God goes through everything we said. And we have to account for it. Why did you say this? And what did you mean when you said this? And look what kind of impact did you realize that when you said this, this is what the outcome would be. And we don't always know, we don't always realize. And being in the very, very privileged position that I am in speaking to people like as I have tonight, having done so for so long, it's amazing how probably every single day of my life I come across somebody who has heard something that I've said and it's had an impact. Now, I only get the positive ones. People come and tell me. Nobody tells me the negatives. Occasionally I hear the negatives, but one has to worry about that. If the positives are so far reaching, so are the negatives. You say something, you don't mean it, you don't think about it, the impact of that can be very, very far reaching. And that's why we have to be careful of what we say. It's not just you might hurt the person you're speaking to. That's one issue. But that's the least of the problems, because that you could sort out. You could say, I'm sorry, I've seen I've hurt you. You can try and fix it. But then once the speech is out, you've got no control over it anymore. It's out there. You have no control. You can't pull it back. You can't modify it. You don't know where it goes. You don't know what force it's having until after your life is over and Hashem shows you. So that little comment that you made, muttering under your breath, look what it's done. Look what it's destroyed. Look how many people have suffered as a result of this. And why did you do it? What was it all about? We have to take responsibility. Fortunately, most of what we say is good. I'm not suggesting that we've got to become all depressive and controlled and very worried about every word we say all the time, because then we'll go a little crazy and we'll say nothing, become paralyzed. We need to understand the other side too, that most of what we say is good. And if God is going to hold us accountable for the negative things that we've said, He's also going to show us with pride and glory all the impact of all the positive things that we've said. Some of you know from the press that a friend of mine, who spent some time out in South Africa as well years ago, was active in the Shiurim at Keter Torah, is in some enormous trouble in the United States at the moment. But a lot of his trouble was caused from the fact that the press got access to his emails. And he's a person who lives on email. He has a BlackBerry. He doesn't keep his notes to himself on BlackBerry, and he gets rid of his frustrations on BlackBerry. He could be sitting at a restaurant and see a friend of his at the next table, and he would send him a BlackBerry. He would send him an email. He wouldn't get up and talk to him. That's the way he operated. So you can imagine, over 6 or 7 years of emails, what's there? The press got hold, due to a whole issue that's going on over there, of the hard disk. These things were deleted years and years ago. They reconstituted every word this man had written, and they were published. Do you know what that is? Just think of your own emails. Every word this man has ever written about his clients and about his friends and about his enemies and about people in the government, every word he's ever written was there for the public. And because he's involved in government work, he had to be called to the Senate for a hearing, and he described to me how he went through the Chazal about what happens after your life, during his life. Imagine there you are sitting in front of a panel of judges with CNN filming, and they go through page, what did you mean when you said this, and who were you talking about when you said this, and is this the way you speak about people? Very, very harsh, but very, very real. And the realization, those emails don't get lost. It's almost impossible to destroy them unless you destroy the hard drive. And there are companies who do nothing but destroy hard drives for you, because there's no other way to destroy them. They can always be reconstituted. So each of our words go onto hard drives that are indestructible. Nothing that we say is destroyed. Once a word is uttered, it's there. There's a force, there's an energy, it can be recaptured, it can be rearticulated, it can be accessed, and it's doing stuff all the time. It's like a radioactive particle. It's sitting out there and carries on emitting radioactive energy all the time. It never stops. And through our life, we say quite a lot. The good stuff carries on building up good, and the negative stuff develops negative, and it's impossible to fix. There's nothing you can do once it's out. So with that understanding, let's look at the Nefesh HaChaim. V'chein b'inyan ha-hitoreruts shelamalo al-yadei b'chinas ha-dibur. And the same applies with respect to the initiation of universal activity through dibur, through the power of speech. Omar Amos Hanovi. Amos the prophet said, and this whole chapter he uses to explain this one verse, ki hinei yotzer harim uverei ruach. Hashem forms mountains and creates ruach, creates spirit. Just pause there for a moment, because he goes into quite a lengthy detail in the small print, which I don't think I'm going to do, but I'm going to just tell you outside what it is. Just as we said that the human soul is divided into three, there is the nefesh, the ruach, the neshama, the ruach and the neshama. So the worlds are divided into four primary levels. There are lots and lots of different levels. Remember, we've talked about how these different universes are linked to one another and how one is able to impact them up and down. The four categories of worlds, the first one is called Atzilut. And that's a world that is called Ayin, a world of nothingness, because there's no way, it has no physical form. It is pure energy. We can't articulate what it is. It's just a power, which is the closest world to God. And it's called Ayin, it's called nothingness, because there's no physical substance at all. The next world is called the world of Bria, the world of creation, because in that world we do what Chazal says called we create, or the world that, in that world there are creations, Yesh Me'ayin, existence from non-existence. That means the energy from Atzilut is taken and is developed and molded into something tangible. So that's called the Olam HaBriya, where there is a creation, Yesh Me'ayin, something from nothing, which is important understanding, because when we talk about Yesh Me'ayin, is often translated as a creation ab nihilo, is that right? Ex nihilo, to create out of nothingness. Well, it's not really nothingness, it's out of Atzilus, it's out of God's energy. It's not out of nothing. Everything that is created out of God's energy. It's just out of nothing, nothing material. So before Einstein, that was assumed to be ex nihilo, out of nothing. What is the creation from? Since Einstein, we know that everything is created from energy. And energy was always there. Hashem is a source of energy that was always there. So everything that is created from Hashem's energy. So the world of Berio is where there is a creation from the world of Atzilus. Then comes the world of Yetziro. Yetziro is formation, where that which has been created in the world of Atzilus, of Berio, is further formed and completed into objects, into real material objects. So the example would be that you could create steel out of nothing. So the creation of steel, that's just a creation from energy over the years that it's been in the ground. But however that started, when that was originally created, it was created from nothing. But to take the steel and build a construction out of the steel, build a house out of the steel or a car, that's called Yetzirah. You're taking something which already exists and reforming it into a new object. That's the Olam Yetzirah. And the fourth one is the Olam Asiyah, which is this world here, which is the world of action. We act here, we do, we act out, and our actions, as we've been learning, impact all the universes up and down again, and that's why it's called the Olam Asiyah. And so he says, if with that understanding, if you look at the first part of this verse, Kihine Yotzer Horim Overe Ruach, God forms in the world of Yetzirah mountains, because mountains are formed. They're not ex nihilo, they're not created out of nothing. Mountains, there's volcanic activity and there's movement of rocks, and that's Yetzirah. But Ruach, energy, that's Bore. Hashem's spirit and energy, Hashem creates that from nothing, from his own energy. So if you've got the two, Kihine Yotzer Horim Overe Ruach, something as substantial as a mountain is not a creation, it's a Yetzirah, it's not a Bria. Something as unsubstantial, non-substantial, something as ethereal as Ruach, as spirit and energy, that's Bria, that God creates from nothing. Umagid la'odom ma'secho, and he tells man what is his conversation. And what does that mean? Ki omru bezoar, the Zohar explains, she'loshon hagoda, whenever it says in Tanakh hagoda, Magid, Shayach al Rosa de Milta, it means the secret, the essence. When it says Dibur, or it says Amiro, it means God is speaking, or God is saying, or whoever it is. But when it says Hagodah, the word Magid means a revelation of the innermost essence of the subject that's being talked about, which gives a new insight into the Hagodah. The Hagodah now is not just a story, the Hagodah now means the unraveling of the secrets of the Exodus. His Hirkanis Adam, says the Reb Chaim Volozhin, the Torah is here warning man, because he lives in this lower world, in this world of Asiya, where we don't see the consequences of what we're doing. It's a very dangerous situation we're in, because we do all sorts of things and we have no clue of their consequence. The only way we know their consequence is through the Torah telling us. Or, as I've said, what I've found so fascinating in some of the work that's been done in the East is thousands of years of chronicled observation. You can't do it in a lifetime. It takes too long to observe and to experiment. But if you're going to observe over generations, then you start seeing cause and effect. You start seeing causality. Certain things happen. You begin to see it over your own lifetime. As you get older, you begin to see certain causality. But to see universal causality, that you can only see after recording and documenting thousands of years of history. But the Torah doesn't want us to have to wait thousands of years. The Torah tells us up front so that we know it. Because a person has no clue what construction or destruction is taking place in worlds above at the moment he's uttering speech. We don't know. And a person could chas v'sholom, God forbid, have a thought. What kind of thought is this that the Chaim Volozhin says? God forbid, a person could have a thought that a light, thoughtless comment has no value. Well, he says chas v'sholom, but that's how most of us think most of the time. We throw these comments out, and we don't really think what they're doing. We think, what kind of impact can what I say be having? A person should know with absolute certainty that every minute little flippant statement and comment, anything that he actually pronounces with his lips, it doesn't get lost and it doesn't go to waste. It's a force, it's an energy, and it is retained, it's gathered and it's retained and it's used, it operates. It's a force in the world, it remains a force in the world. As I said to you, that was the purpose of my opening comments. We don't even realize that in our direct one-to-one relationships, to realize the force of our comments, both positive and negative. Certainly to realize their universal impact is something that is beyond us, but that's what it is. So we now carry on the bottom of the next page, the end of the small print, because the small print was all that I explained to you about the four different worlds. The Zohar says even the air that comes out of the mouth, asar v'duchto islay, it has a place. It is an energy that has a place. Avid, and Hashem makes out of that air what He makes. V'afilu milo debarnash, v'afilu kala, and even a human word, one word, and even just the sound of a voice, the intonation without the words, lo havi berekana, it doesn't go, it's not empty. The asar v'duchto isluhu lechulo, and each one has an area and a place where it is kept. Everything is stored, everything is kept. There's a place on the disc where it's put, and it can be recovered at any time. But it, unlike a disc where it just sits there latently and doesn't do anything until you recall it, in this case it's actually radioactive. So it sits on the disc and it's actually constantly emitting. It's like one of these viruses, I suppose, that are sending these emails out all the time without you even, once it's there, it just keeps going. Keeps going. Milo umilo de apik barnash mipume. Every word that a person utters with his mouth, salka la'ila uvoka rikin, goes up and bursts through skies. It bursts through barriers. The alot la'asa de alos, and it goes up to the place where it goes. And another piece of Zohar, de hal milo de apik barnash mipume. That word that a human being utters with his mouth. Salko, Vokuriki, and Vikaima Basa the Kaimot goes up, breaks through barriers, and goes up to wherever it goes. Shekol hayotze mipivye aser lamala umeorer koach elyon. Everything that emerges from a person's mouth goes up and initiates an energy, a power up above there. Don't forget, this is all based on the Nefesh HaChaim's original thesis that the fact that we created B'tzelem Elohim, we created with the image of Elohim, means that God gave the power of energy to us. We affect energy. We affect universal energy. God has programmed it and set it up, and of course God can intervene. But the power of universal energy is in our hands. And last time we talked about how we can initiate energy through action. Here we initiate energy through words. Hein b'dibur tov, mosif kach b'kirchas hakadoshim. If it's a good word, if it's a good utterance, a good word, it adds positive energy into the energies of sanctity, as Yeshayahu says. And the Zohar goes on to say, "Delet lach milo milo." There is no word. Umanda apik milo kadisha mipume. Any word that a human being utters, any word with any sanctity, milo doraisa, a word of Torah, is avid mine kalo, becomes into a voice. The salik leila, and it goes up. The isaru kadoshim malko ilo, and it initiates activity with the holy king Hashem up on the top, umis atron bereshe, and it crowns his head. And what does a crown do for a king? What's the image of a crown? Glory. It glorifies. It radiates glory and stature. So the words of Torah, any positive thought, any holy thought that one sends up, goes and sits, it forms part of Hashem's glory, so to say. Chedein ishtaka ched v'sol la'ela v'tato, and that creates a joy both up and below. So there's a positive energy, and those who've learned Torah in an energetic way will have experienced it, that you can be in a low position, you can be miserable, you can be depressed, you can be downcast. If you have a good, really good session of learning, you feel great. What's happened? It's not that it doesn't, you can say it's the intellectual challenge, but if you try it with other things, it doesn't work. You play a good game of chess or do some maths problems, you know, it detracts you for a while, but when the problem's over, when you finish the exercise, you're left with the same old depression. Not so when you're learning Torah. It actually, your energy changes. It alters your energy. Why? What's happened? Because you've sent energy up, it's come down again, and there's an enormous amount of ishtakach ched v'so le'elo v'sato. There is a chedva, there is a joy, a lightness up on the top and down below. Ba'ayin bo'ot b'fashas v'yakel, the same as in v'yakel in the Zohar. Nora'ot v'niflo'os, amazing things. Inyon hadibur shilbinyin kadishin do'oraisa, the power of holy words of Torah. Shekol almin mehirin mechedvoso, because all the words, the world light up with joy. There's a positive lighting energy that results. Usamochis v'gil tovoyne b'hecholon kadishin iloyin, and great happiness and celebration takes place in the huge halls of sanctity. Huma'atron v'hu ba'atron kadishin, and they all crown those places with crowns of sanctity and glory. B'chen, let's just go a little bit further in that, and then let's just discuss its implications for us. B'chen, and the same applies. B'vuah b'mkones rabbis b'tikunim and the tikune azor shemikol dibur v'kol v'hevel b'raisa v'tzimusa. From every word or sound, or just breathing, that comes out of Torah or prayer, nivroim kama malachim kadoshim, several powers, several forces, angels are created. Uvehefech, b'dibur asher lo tov chas v'shalom, v'boine rikim v'olom ha'shoshav, you build negative forces. V'goyim chas v'shalom harisus v'churban ha'olom ha'sidra ha'merkovach bo'ish ha'noigim l'sherish ha'dibur, and one destroys entire worlds. Again from the Zohar, the whole les lach tava vish, there's no good word or bad word that doesn't have its place. For Elohim labrius sheroyus ve'inan yodus mahim royus, woe for people who see and don't understand what they're seeing. Ki ein lecho dibur she'en lo mokum, to know that there isn't a speech, a word of speech that doesn't have its place. We see this theme coming over and over again. Again, let lach milo milo v'chama kaser, and he goes on about the forces that are created through words. And in the second last paragraph of Chetiv, lama yiktzof ha'alakim al kolecho, why does Hashem get angry at your voice? V'chiba v'smaaseh yodecho, and undermine the deeds of your hands. V'omru gadol ha'oime b'fiv min ha'oiseb maaseh, there is more energy in an utterance than in a deed. Of course, a deed with thought has it both, but just to do a mindless thought, a deed, doesn't have as much spiritual energy as an utterance. V'omru kol ha-machalif b'diburoi, if a person speaks inaccurately, ki ilu oved avedus kechavim, that's as serious as idolatry. We're not even talking about a lie, an exaggeration, just inaccurate talk. Because inaccurate talk, if what you're saying doesn't reflect what actually occurred, that's a negative force, a negative energy, and that negative energy is as dangerous as idolatry. So one has to be careful in the way one reports things. Some of you remember, I've often told you how the briskers are careful. If you ask them the time, they'll always say approximately, although they keep their watches absolutely perfectly timed. And the reason they keep their watches perfectly timed is because it says in the Torah you can't have false measures and weights in your house. It's not only because you might use them to cheat somebody. Rabbi Lachman says quite clearly, the issue is to possess them, even if you never use them, even if you don't even have a business where they could possibly be used. To have them in your house is the issue. Why? To have something that is inherently false is an issue. And so to have a watch that's set at the wrong time, if one's going to take it that far, is an issue. It's a lie. Your watch is lying. And you carry it around on your wrist. So they're very, very careful to make sure that their watches are perfectly timed and they check it regularly, but still, if you say that what is the time, they will always say approximately, because the word has to reflect the reality. Zema shekosuv umagid l'odom maseicha, and that's what it means when it says in Amos the pasuk, the verse we started, and God tells you what is your talk. The term the mashia be'et amod ha'odom says din v'cheshbon l'fanav yisporach, when man goes up to heaven to give accountability for his actions. As hu yisporach magid lo hasod, he will reveal the secret. So remember, hagodol means that he's not just going to tell us what we said; he's actually going to unravel it for us. Raza demita, mashe gorom secho lemala be'ilom asalion, is he will show us the full range of impact that every one of our words had. It's not just that God kind of replays the tape and says, "You said this. Why did you say this? And this wasn't true. And this was lashon hara. And this was this." So you know that we'll kind of get through. But imagine seeing the impact in the entire universe of every word. When we realize, and I think what we're going to find more painful is when we see the positive impact. I think we're going to find that more painful than the negative impact. Why?
Could have done so
much. Yeah, just think what power we had. Just think what impact we could have had. Who knew that we were sitting on such energy, on such force? I think that's going to be far more painful for us to handle than the negative things that we did. We've said that Hagoda is Raza Demilta. Let's pause there and see whether we go further or not. But I would like to hear from you the implications of this. What are the implications of this for our lives?
So we learned the Rabbi Lappin show after. Can't repeat that we learned Rabbi Lappin after we heard when we shine our mouth.
So you will only be responsible for the stuff from tonight onwards.
Does it actually remove what you did before?
That's a good question. Remember, he said last time, yes, that with teshuva we can actually reverse negative energy. So it's very difficult just to do a blanket teshuva. One actually has to remember the things we've said, and that's why there are people who at the end of the day go through their day, not just their actions. They go through what they've said and work through what they've said to understand the impact of what they've said.
How does thoughts impact on all of us?
Thoughts the next chapter. Thoughts the next chapter.
Think about it until November.
But what else are the implications for you? Don't think universal, just think you and your family and your own life. What does this mean?
Not so much implication. People love talking bad news.
So that amplifies it. But what does it mean for you? What could you take away? In what way could it change your life? Yeah, so that's right. That's good. That would all be good stuff. But I'm looking at something much more immediately impactful. Much more immediate impact.
That's the right answer. But
when people say Lashon Hara, it's always the big picture, and people always say, I can't, you know, I like talking, I like listening to the things. Maybe there's a specific small element that you can start, and that could be the impetus for bigger behavior. Like someone suggested, he said, when you have tefillin on your head and your arm, during that half an hour, try no losh. No idle chatter, and that will then give you the impetus for something further.
That's all, but you're all such a tzaddikim. You all focus on what you're going to stop doing. Mm-hmm. What about what you're going to start doing?
You say someone has been hurt by words. Can that heal in time, or as you say, is radioactive forever? Can the recipient or the doer or giver come to a working relationship?
They can, but very seldom without an apology from the giver. And apologies are hard, because you've got to be able to communicate to the other person sufficient remorse that the other person really, really believes it. It's got to be very, very authentic, very, very authentic, which means you've got to feel the pain, and you've got to be able to communicate the pain. That's why very often they are. That's what people want to see, and they want to, even sometimes in court cases. They want it resolved to see remorse. They want somebody to feel bad and badly about what they've done. It makes it easier to get over it. So in the process of retracting negative talk, the power of apology is huge.
But if it's not forthcoming,
then it's hard for the person. Then the person sometimes can work through it and genuinely get to a stage where they say, no, it's just not important to me, I'm through it, it doesn't affect me anymore. But they've got, it's a process that they've got to work through, and it can take time. Why?
Because you see that the power of good things builds. So if you're going to say something, it's on the way, or think about good things, why stop? And they build worlds, and they create spirits that we've seen in the other.
Okay, and we're getting much closer to what I'm looking for.
One of the sins of the Meraglim was that they said that we seemed in their eyes to be like grasshoppers. So, but understanding is who gave you the right to think that they saw you as small. And in the same way, we shouldn't see ourselves as small. We should start seeing ourselves as people that have tremendous impact, and we should spend a hell of a lot of more time making sure that what we say to our children, to our spouses, to everybody that we come into contact with is going to impact them.
So I think that's great too. So you're saying we've got to start realizing how powerful we are.
Absolutely.
We've got to start realizing our own greatness, and it's not because there's no arrogance in that. It's not because I'm great because of anything I did. I was born great. The Moshim gave me an enormously powerful engine called the Neshama that has the ability to change universes just with the utterance of a word, and therefore we have to know and we have to understand that, and we kind of understand it because we believe in brachas and we believe in tefillah. We understand that words can have enormous impact, but we always think it's not our words, somebody else's words. You've got to go somewhere for it, but we need to understand our own power and our own energy. Let's go a little bit further with it. Even look how easy it is to create positive energy. Now, who's the first beneficiary of the positive energy you create? Yourself. And then the people closest to you. So what's the mechanism now of creating positive energy? Start using positive words. Select your words carefully. So when somebody says, how are you? Don't say, Baruch Hashem. That's a sure way to attract negative energy. Because Baruch Hashem really, what it really is, but thank God. That's what it really is. People say, could be worse. These are such negative things. You've got to be able to respond in a way that there's, when you say good morning, what are you doing when you say good morning to somebody? Now, we think it's nothing. This is what he said. Chas v'sholom, people might think their words are meaningless. What does the word good morning mean? It's a bracha. You're giving a bracha. You're giving a bracha. Now, how would you feel if you went to somebody for a bracha and he kind of said, you know, in a flippant kind of way, and you would feel you got done out of a bracha? That's not the kind of bracha you want. But imagine if we really project this. If we really realize when we're saying good morning, what do we mean? We're making a statement, it's a bracha to another person, and what would be such a terrible thing of saying good morning to yourself? Why would that be so bad? What would be so bad to get up in the morning and say, it's a good morning? The sun is shining, I'm alive, it's a good morning. What would be such a bad thing to say? But certainly in the way we communicate it, so if we say good morning and kind of matter, good morning with a funny expression on our face, we're sending out negative energy. Every time we say anything, there's an opportunity to create around ourselves a cycle of positive energy, which starts attracting more positive energy, and it's felt by other people, it's felt by ourselves. Behold, the Rebbeinu has programmed the universe to respond to it. It goes up, right up to the very top. Remember we learned in the beginning, how long does it take to get up to the source? When you say good morning, how long does it take to get to God? Instant. And for God to send it back in multiplied ways of instant. So the moment you say it, there's impact. And you're the first beneficiary of the impact. So our capacity to build ourselves through positive choice of words is enormous. We spoke about it about building up positive atmospheres in other ways, the way you decorate a house, those things, show your ideas, the kind of pictures you've got in a house, but words, just the words we choose. And we've got to be careful that it doesn't become too American and you start and the words start meaning nothing. You just say the words because you're taught to say positive words. So you know, and how are you? Fantastic. And then you know, the guy's really about to go into hospital. And how's your business? Oh, couldn't be better. And you know he's bankrupt and he's about to go to court. And that's not the way either. But to find real, authentic positiveness and link into it and express it, to actually say it. To say it to your children, to say it to one another, to say it to yourselves, and to find opportunities to say something positive to people. And it doesn't matter where. You can be standing in an elevator. You can be standing in a lift. A lift is an interesting place of negative energy. I don't know how they don't always fall. I don't know how the lifts go up. Because there's such negative energy in them. Because everybody is so protective. You try it. Try walking into a lift and with a big smile on your face, say, good morning, everyone. And just see what happens in that lift. Just feel the energy. What happens in that small little area? Don't say a whole lot more than that because they'll think you're crazy. But even if you just say that, if you just find opportunities to engage with people with positive energy, positive choice of words, with a positive expression, tone of voice. It's about tone as well. It's about kol, not only about dibur. It's the tone of voice, it's the timbre of the voice, it's the emotions that you're projecting with it, it's the thoughts that go out with it. Try and use words as an opportunity to create positive forces around you. and you'll see the response immediately. And if you want to do this a little bit more scientifically, and you're disciplined enough to do it, then start chronically. Start doing it, and at the end of your day, actually go through your day again and notice the differences. And you'll find immediately, it won't take several days, it'll be instant, that you'll start noticing the effect of the positive energy that you're creating around and about yourself.